So, Mr. Schultz?
Good morning, Your Honors. Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff. In this claim of disability for a child's supplemental security income benefits, the administrative law judge erred in the manner in which he weighed the opinions of the treating neuropsychologist and pediatrician. Those doctors' opinions were consistent in indicating that the claimant had marked limitations in two what are called domains or areas of functioning, which would require the ALJ to find this claimant disabled. The ALJ, however, adopted the opinion of a medical expert who was not a treating or an examining doctor. And the reasons given by the ALJ are not supported by substantial evidence and in some respects mischaracterized as the evidence in this case. Dr. Williamson was a neuropsychologist, and he administered two extensive neuropsychological examinations to this claimant and based his opinion as to her functional severity or functional limitations on the reports or on the results of that testing. Dr. Larrabee, who was the medical expert, was not a neuropsychologist, and there's no evidence that he had any special training in interpreting neuropsychological reports. He said that the only explanation he gave for his opinion was that he based it on the neuropsychological reports from Dr. Williamson. So it's really not logical for the ALJ to adopt the opinion of a non-specialist psychologist who says that he based his opinion on the examining neuropsychologist report when that opinion is contrary or inconsistent with the neuropsychologist's opinion. And Dr. Larrabee provided no explanation in his testimony as to why his opinion differed from the neuropsychologist.
I don't understand. What is it you think her disability is?
Her disability is she has primarily a sensory defensiveness disorder.
What on earth is that?
Right. Well, a sensory defensiveness disorder is a condition where a person reacts in a hypersensitive manner to stimulation of any kind, which is...
What does that mean concretely?
Well, in this case, if she would be brushed, like there was evidence, if someone would just brush against her on the bus, she would experience that as a threat, and she would lash out at the other students.
So she's sensitive. So what?
Well, she lashes out at the other students.
What does that mean, lash out?
She would call people names. There's evidence that she slammed people's fingers in desks. She would...
She would do what?
Slam students' fingers in desks.
She assaults? She's violent? Is that what you're saying?
She's aggressive, yes. There's evidence that she was aggressive. There is evidence that she was assaulted on numerous occasions, but that was due to her provoking other students.
I mean, this makes it sound as if half the children in the United States are disabled.
Yeah.
Aggressive children are disabled? Most children are aggressive, aren't they?
Well, I would say, I think the question here is really the opinion of the specialist.
The specialist gobbledygook, I don't know why an administrative law judge has to buy that.
Because there's no contrary opinion by a qualified doctor.
Common sense, right?
I think this court has held that when it comes to questions of medicine, common sense
is
can be
medicine,
misleading.
Is it medicine or is it some kind of...
Neuropsychology. Which is a recognized specialty in psychology.
I don't understand aggressiveness being regarded as a mental illness.
Well, the question for the domains, one of the domains is the
what
ability...
What is she disabled from doing? I don't understand. She goes to school.
Well, in children's cases, it's actually a different analysis than in adults' cases. There are these six domains, and the question is the child seriously limited in two of those domains? If so, then they are disabled under the Act.
Do you want to talk about the asthma for a minute? Assuming that we were to order a remand, will Ms. Sanchez have a reasonable shot at showing that Chilla's asthma meets the criteria that's identified in the listing 103.03?
Right. The asthma, I think there are some. There is a chance if the ALJ analyzes the case, because there is evidence that she did not have extended symptom-free periods of
really, childhood of asthma is extremely common. Is there some medical reason to believe she won't outgrow it?
That she would not outgrow?
Most kids outgrow asthma, right?
No, there's no evidence of that. Your Honor, that issue was raised primarily because the Appeals Council specifically had ordered this ALJ to consider the subsection of the
listing. Taking it as kind of standard childhood disease croup, say, something like that, and say, oh, this child is disabled. I mean, the whole, as I understand the concern here with this strange notion of childhood disability is that these are people going to have trouble as adults. Isn't that right? Isn't that the theory?
No, that's not my understanding. Is that the reason is there's a recognition that parents of disabled children or children with significant problems often can't work to the same extent that other parents can, or they have extra expenses.
That's fair. So I withdraw what I said. But so she has some childhood asthma, and she's a aggressive child in class and lashes out at other kids. Why would that? How would that distinguish her from millions of children?
The only thing I can base it on is the evaluations. There, I think, are very few children that have a sensory defensiveness disorder.
Wow, must be millions.
Well, not according
lashing
to
lashing out at the other kids. Goodness.
Where did you go to school?
Fancy private schools.
Your Honor, I would also like to point out that the administrative law judge was supposed to consider all of the relevant evidence in this case, and he didn't do that.
What did he leave out?
Well, there are school records. The most recent school records from Chilla's fifth grade teacher indicated that she had some significant problems and that she rarely was caught.
What does a significant problem mean? I mean, really, you have to be concrete.
The third grade teacher said she had no problems.
That's correct. But the ALJ had to rely on the entire record. And the school records from the period of time most close to when the doctors gave their opinions indicated that she was having significant problems. She couldn't get along with other students. She was aggressive, provoking
other students. That can't be. There are a lot of children who don't get along with other children.
Your Honor, the case has to be evaluated under the regulations, and the regulations indicate.
It's supposed to be presumably applied with some common sense, right?
I would not disagree with that, but there's
a school records showed a tendency to get distracted on occasion. Is that a symptom of a disability?
Well, that was a mischaracterization of the records and a gross minimalizing what the
there's
teacher
the
said.
Minimizing is what you're trying to say. Or what was it that was minimized?
Well, again, the teacher said that this child rarely cooperated with others, rarely demonstrated self-control, could not resolve conflicts appropriately. She did not complete her assignments on time. She was aggressive, and she provoked other students.
So was she expelled or suspended?
She was suspended one time, an out-of-school suspension, and the record shows she had 4 in-school suspensions.
Suspended for how long? She was kicked out of school for a period?
That was just a day or two.
Well,
and then she had the 4 in-school suspensions lasted two or three days each. I would just ask, when you're in looking at the claim, that you look at the regulation which defines.
He wasn't entitled to rely on this Dr. Larrabee because he wasn't a neurologist?
He wasn't a neuropsychologist?
He's a psychologist.
That's correct, but he didn't provide.
Problems are psychological. Can a psychologist testify about that? Is he not qualified to testify about a child's behavior?
Well, he said that he based his opinion on the neuropsychologist's reports, and yet his opinion differed, and he gave no explanation. And that's the reason that the ALJ's decision is not supported by the evidence in this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Mr. Sanchez? Not related, I assume.
No, Your Honor.
That would be unusual.
Alfred Sanchez, appearing on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. Good morning, Your Honors. I guess I'll start off addressing the appellant's comments about the ALJ failing to properly weigh the medical source opinions of record. In this case, Ms. Sanchez argues that the ALJ was required to give controlling weight to the opinions of Dr. Williamson and Dr. Rainham because they were treating physicians, and as such, they were to be entitled to controlling weight. However, a treating physician's opinion does not enjoy a presumption of correctness when there's evidence to the contrary in the record.
Yeah, but what would support the ALJ's decision to credit Dr. Larrabee over Dr. Williamson? Dr. Williamson evaluated the child on three occasions, and although he took, the mother's statements into account, he did so only very cautiously. What basis did the ALJ have to disregard Dr. Williamson's opinions, the neuropsychologist?
Well, there are other opinions in the record.
Right, Dr. Ranum, a generalist with no particular expertise.
There are also other physicians that had examined or that had seen the claimant, including there was a Dr. Little, a Dr. Webb Berman.
But are any of them neuropsychologists? We have come, to a time in history when there are real specialists in these fields.
They were psychologists. I cannot say with any certainty whether or not they were neuropsychologists. However, they did do assessments of the claimant, and when they assigned a global assessment functioning scores to her, they came out moderate symptoms and mild symptoms. So you did have those scores in the record, which contradicted in stark contrast to the very limiting opinion of Dr. Williamson. And you also have in the record the school reports. Now, the school reports, as Dr. Williamson noted and as the ALJ noted, were in stark contrast to what the mother was saying. The school reports indicated that in second grade, the claimant interacted well with teachers, adults, and she had good academic progress. The second grade teacher said she did not have any significant problems academically, socially, behaviorally in school. Third grade reports said she had some peer conflicts, but that was nothing out of the norm. Fourth grade, she was at or above level in reading and scored at a sixth grade level in comprehension. The fifth grade report card said she was a good observer and asked good questions.
But does all that matter if she's beating children into pulps?
Well, I think a lot of those...
Modern woman.
I think a lot of those comments came from the claimant's mother, and they're not necessarily supported by what the teachers were seeing at school. They weren't supported by what the other psychologists that had examined her were reporting. And so the ALJ was left with a doctor who, Dr. Williamson, who didn't see the claimant all that often, saw her really 45 minutes at a time, three times over 3 years, appears to be based in his opinion off of the mother's reports that are conflicting with these school reports that he's seen.
Well, as I noted, he took her thoughts into consideration, but he really was very cautious about that, about the mother.
And I think he had doubted her credibility to some extent, and I think the ALJ did too. And so what he's left with this opinion from this Dr. Williamson, who he doesn't see, who doesn't see the claimant all that often, these other physicians, school records, and I think he does the appropriate thing in this case. He doesn't play doctor. He calls upon a medical expert to review the entire record, which and all the evidence in the record, which is not something that Dr. Williamson had an opportunity to do.
Why didn't he call a neuropsychologist or a neuropsychiatrist or a neurologist or a psychiatrist? I mean, why is he calling on generalists?
I believe he calls upon. I can't speak to why he calls on a generalist, but it is noted in the record that there are different diagnoses being thrown around. One's sensory deficit disorder, one's attention disorder, one's hyperactivity disorder. So given all that evidence, I think he tries to do the right thing and calls upon a psychologist who's going to review all the evidence. It's going to include not only Dr. Williamson's report, but also the reports of these other physicians who and psychologists who examine her, and look at the school records as well.
Let me talk to you a little bit about the asthma, if I may, because Judge Crabb concluded that the ALJ's failure to address the listing was harmless because, in her view, the child's asthma didn't meet the listing criteria. But is that really an appropriate judgment for a federal court to make? I mean, so long as there is some evidence that might satisfy the listing criteria, mustn't it be the ALJ who weighs that evidence? Don't we have to remand to the ALJ for that?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The ALJ acknowledged on page 1, which is, I think it's page 39 of the appellant's appendix, first page of the decision, that the case was remanded back to him to further evaluate the claimant's asthma under listing 103.03, which is the listing for children's asthma. He further noted that appeals counsel also instructed him to obtain additional medical and treatment notes on that asthma to further evaluate it, and he did that. In the second hearing, he admits an additional 12 exhibits into the record, and then there's a discussion of those exhibits. Specifically, he notes that the claimant had never been sent to the hospital or been to the hospital for any breathing difficulties. He noted that the school nurse reported that the claimant never requested the use of her inhaler. She never presented for any other health reasons. He noted that the claimant participated in the gym class. He noted that the claimant testified she was taking chorus classes. Claimant went to camp, and there's no indications in the record that she used her inhaler at camp.
Are there indications that she didn't?
No, there aren't. But examinations, the record is replete with examinations showing that she, that examinations regularly showed that her respiratory sounds were normal. The record contains progress notes documenting examinations which there was no evidence of wheezing, and spirometry results were with normal limits, except for one occasion in which the claimant had an upper viral respiratory infection. And so when you look at listing 103.03 and the ALJ's discussion of the evidence, the ALJ, you know, this is a case about a girl who has a relatively mild case of asthma. And the ALJ said, you know, based on his review of the record, that this just was a case where she was far from medically meeting a listing. The 103.03 requires, there's a threshold that must be crossed, and there's two alternatives that must be met at 103.03 section C. One is persistent low-grade wheezing between acute attacks, and in this case, there isn't evidence of persistent wheezing, and there really isn't any documentation of acute attacks. Dr. Ranum, who treated claimant for asthma, reported that he never saw any exacerbations of her asthma. And Dr. Buckstein, who saw the claimant numerous times, indicated that he never makes a reference to any particular asthma attacks. And then the second threshold is that there must be an absence of symptom-free periods requiring the daytime and nocturnal use of symptomatic bronchodilators. In this case, there's no evidence that the claimant was using her inhaler at night, and we do have extended symptom-free periods from 1995 to 1997. There's no evidence in the record that of medical treatment, and there's another break in the record from 1999, from November 99 to, I believe it's December 2000. So I think this was a clear case to the ALJ that she just had a mild case of asthma, and he did address the listing and remanded this case back. I don't think the outcome will come out any different.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Sanchez. Mr. Schultz, anything further?
Just a couple of comments. In terms of Dr. Little, who became the claimant's treating psychiatrist, page 449, her opinion doesn't support the ALJ, but in fact she found that the claimant's social phobia and obsessive-compulsive disorder remained significant impairment.
Why didn't the teachers notice?
Well, again, these opinions were later opinions in 2002, and it appears, at least from the record, that the claimant's condition had gotten worse because the psychiatrists and the teachers noted increasing symptoms, as apparently did Dr. Williamson. That's all I have.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Schultz and Mr. Sanchez.